Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another special episode of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Sonos. Now, I've been in the Sonos ecosystem for as long as I can remember, but a lot of people aren't yet. And if you were considering taking your first steps into Sonos land, then I have to recommend that the best way to get started with a Sonos product is by going for the Sonos Roam. The Sonos Roam is their latest speaker, but it's also their smallest speaker. It's actually also one of their cheapest speakers as well. So I'm not going to set your bar too high on your entry point, $279 in Australia. The Sonos Roam is a portable speaker. It's got Bluetooth and Wi-Fi on board. It's got a choice of the Google or the Amazon voice assistant. It's battery powered or can be wirelessly powered from any wireless charger in your home. And it sounds so much bigger than actually looks. It is kind of creepy how good the volume is out of such a small package. Now, this is the kind of speaker that I have been moving from room to room as I go about my day. I take it outside when I'm working in the garden or if I'm by the barbecue, and it just continues to adapt to the room, to the outside area, to the surroundings to still produce the best sound. Even if you put it on its side, it has a different sound profile to when it stood upright. It can survive the elements. I've hosed it. I've literally hosed the Sonos Roam, and it continues to sound good and even shoots off the water droplets that are sitting on the actual body of the speaker as well. It's really quite cool to see. If you're interested, make sure you go to the Sonos website, read all about it, have a look at how many different audio and music services that are compatible on Sonos, and you'll absolutely be surprised. Anyway, just head to sonos.com for all of the details there. Now, today I did say this is a special episode, and it's a special episode because we're going to get specific. We're going to talk about Starlink. Starlink is the internet service by the great Elon Musk, and it's just launched in Australia. It's in its beta, and we're going to talk to one of their first customers in Australia. Lisa spent some time talking to us. We're going to get to her interview shortly, but I want to give you a huge rundown around what Starlink is, how it works, where it's going to be available before we actually hear from Lisa on the ground. So let's get straight into the Starlink episode of Technology Uncorked. Now, in Australia, we are a massive country. We're physically a very big continent that sits in the middle of the ocean. And as a result, we're actually a really difficult country to wire up for good internet. Now, in the capital cities, we have reasonably good internet. Some properties have access to gigabit speed internet connections, but the norm at most households in capital cities is at least 100 megabits per second, which is very good. You know, to be honest, whether you're working from home, you've got six people in the house, people streaming, whatever the case may be, 100 megabits is pretty good. In fact, the norm that most people actually sign up to is somewhere between 50 and 100, depending on the household and what plan they choose to go for. But if you live in regional communities in Australia, and let's be honest, that's a huge portion of landmass that is in those areas, a lot of those properties don't get wired internet to the home. A lot of those properties have what's called SkyMuster NBN access. And SkyMuster is a service that was provided by the government to try and complete the NBN or the National Broadband Network with this option, because running cables to all of these homes would cost a mozza. It just isn't feasible. So they launched the SkyMuster satellite, a single satellite, into orbit around 36,000 kilometers from Earth. It's quite a far distance away, but when you have one satellite doing all of the legwork, it needs to be so high up that it can service east to west coast. And then here is the problem. The cost per month is very high. If you want to use SkyMuster NBN, you're paying quite a premium with very small amounts of downloads. You'll also have fluctuating speeds as well. Because of how far away it is, you'll have latency issues with ping times and things like that. So it's not necessarily a very good service for when you're on Zoom calls or even when you're trying to do online gaming. It's just not feasible. What it does at least do is provide internet access to many, many Australians, and I guess it does tick a box from most points of view. Now, when Elon Musk decided to launch or create Starlink, the game changed a little bit. He is regularly launching up to 60 satellites at a time and throwing them into orbit. They all tend to follow each other, almost like a centipede would look across the sky. And people have spotted that and almost freaked out as to what all these bright lights are in the sky. And the first question most people ask is, why can I even see them? Well, the answer is, as I mentioned, SkyMaster is 36,000 kilometers in the air. Starlink is only 550 kilometers. And as a result, your home connection to every satellite is a far shorter distance, meaning that your speeds are improved and your latency is also improved as well. So huge benefits by having a low orbit satellite. As a result of being such low orbit, you need more of them. And there are plans of up to 14,000 or even more Starlink satellites to roam the Earth by the time the project is complete. That's a lot of satellites. How does it actually look? Well, imagine, and I said this on radio as an example, but imagine going into a fruit and veggie store when you go to Woolies or whatever, and you pick up a bag of oranges and it's in that red net. If you look at an orange and pretend that's the Earth, then red net is the pattern that Starlink produces. So effectively, you wrap a net of satellites around the globe, and that means that at any point in time, every household could point to a satellite. It's interesting. What I didn't realize until you're here in this interview is that the satellite actually moves. It's not just a fixed satellite that sits on your home when you're provided with a Starlink satellite. It will automatically rotate and point to its nearest and best connection that it can have. So it's a fascinating piece. Now, I've been talking about the distance and saying the speeds are improved. Well, the speeds are dramatically improved. Now, with SkyMaster, most speeds or the plans that you can sign up for is at best 50 megabits per second, and most people tend to experience around the 30 to 40 mark. With Starlink, the assumed mount that you'll have in terms of speed is between 100 and 150 megabits per second, which is as good as, I said, most people are getting in capital cities. Here is the other piece, though. Those in Australia who have been doing tests since they've received their Starlink kit are receiving around 300 megabits per second. And that is an absolute blessing for anybody out there who has been suffering on poor internet and is now able to do this. From a cost perspective, at the moment, it's $139 per month with no limit on downloads. In the future, this will probably change. I cannot imagine Starlink being a fixed price per month and doing that. The other thing that made me think, well, okay, it's going to launch in Australia. Where is it going to be available? Let's not all jump out of our seats and go and sign up for Starlink because not everybody can. Now, at the moment, it's literally servicing sort of the border of Victoria and New South Wales. So people in northern Victoria and southern New South Wales have been able to get onto this early program. And that is, as I said, because the netting is still being built. So there is a path at the moment where Starlink satellites are actually traversing that part of Earth and it is working for them to connect. So not everybody is able to. However, there is one other caveat here. ACMA, Australian Communication something, 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 this body who grants licenses for internet connectivity and things like that, have granted a license to Starlink for low and remote density areas only. And when I look at the map of Australia, it means it excludes Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, and Perth. Canberra is actually still okay. Canberra can get Starlink. Darwin can get Starlink as well, which is good to see. And even Tasmania, all of Tasmania can get it. Now, for anybody listening in Sydney, let me give you a bit of an understanding as to what the capital city part actually means. So it starts from about, if I go south, people in Budaroo, Jarara, Dunmore, you can't get Starlink. And you're pretty far south of Sydney. Heathcote, no good. Warrumbi, no good. Bringelly, no good. You can't get it. Lawson, Currajong, Box Hill, Pitt Town, you're not able to get it. Cessnock, if we start heading north, Cessnock, Newcastle, Morisset, Shoal Bay, Anna Bay, you're sitting around the border. So there is still quite a large chunk. That is, we are talking about a good piece of where people do live in New South Wales. You're unable to get it. People on the Gold Coast, for example, you're close enough to Brisbane that you cannot get Starlink either. And that's a five-year license. Now, I can tell you that there are a number of homes which live quite close to capital cities that I know of that are forced to use SkyMuster. And I think ACMA is making a huge mistake by only granting Starlink with the permissions to work in low and remote density areas where there actually still is a strong case for people inside these other areas that really do need the help of Starlink and can really use this and benefit from this. Now, why am I so pent up about this and so vocal about Starlink being a success in Australia? And it's because of one big reason: real estate. When I think about where we live, we're all living on the fringes. We're all living in capital cities. And we're also paying a premium for property. You'll open any newspaper, watch the news bulletin at any channel, and you'll hear about small dwellings selling for millions of dollars and people going through school and starting to get their jobs saying, I'll never afford to buy a home. And the reality is that all these people want to live in those areas because that's where their workplace is, or that's where they can actually manage to work from home. You can't necessarily work from home successfully if your internet is not up to par. And that's why Starlink, in my opinion, could really change the game. You could be living 200 kilometers out of Sydney, somewhere which is actually a low and remote density area. And if you're able to receive strong internet connections, then there is a strong case that you could do your job from there. Now, obviously, not every job can be done from home, and I accept that, but there is a very huge amount of jobs that can. And I think the pandemic has proven that we can work from home if your job allows for it. We just need the right connectivity to do so. Having a computer, anyone can get a computer, anyone can get electricity, but can anybody in Australia get an equal playing field when it comes to the internet? No. With Starlink, that conversation can change. The second part of that conversation is outside of the workplace. And let's think about education. A number of years ago, maybe 6 odd years ago, I went to the Northern Territory. I went with a charity organization called Red Dust. And I landed in Alice Springs and I spent the night there. And then I drove 6 hours into a small, very, very remote community town called Kintore. Kintore is off the grid. They are a very small remote community of Indigenous Australians who have lived there, lived on the land for as long as the land has been there. And I've seen the way that they have had to live. They have got electricity. They have got a supply of water. They haven't got a very good internet connection. I remember one building in the whole town had an internet connection. I think it was a very expensive satellite connection to make it work. And it was where the school was. They have one or two phones. They are literally opening their staff room door to some of the locals to be able to log on to a computer and do something. And when I saw that, it's heartbreaking. You see classrooms that are full of computers because they are very well supported from a donations point of view. They are able to get computers, but can they get a good internet service? No. And if you can't get a good internet service, as we all know, that's a huge restriction to information. It's a huge restriction to being able to connect to other communities and other parts of the world. And if you think about somebody who lives in the middle of Australia, being able to connect to other cities, other areas is extremely important, not just from an education point of view, but think about the staff, the teachers who work there, going about their jobs without a good internet connection, thinking about the students that need to learn these certain skills, almost being left in the 1990s because their internet speed still sits there. You can only move as fast as your internet connection sometimes. And I started to see that, and it really is quite sad. That could change with Starlink. So what do I think needs to happen? These kind of places, these communities are the ones that need Starlink as soon as possible. You put a couple of these satellite dishes, one on top of the school, one on top of their community hall, and get the connections going, have Wi-Fi, start to provision smartphones or laptops and watch things change. It does make a difference. Allowing people to connect and communicate in different ways makes a huge difference. One of the other big things with that, and just going back to this Kintore town, is there was one bus. It operated twice a week on a one-way basis between there and Alice Springs. So you could get a bus that would go from Alice Springs to Kintore on a Tuesday, and it would go back on a Thursday. If that's the only way that that community can actually get to a town where they have health services, where they have certain stores or whatever it is that they're looking for, that's tragic. If you have an adequate internet connection, that can really change your needs in terms of why you would need to travel and who needs to travel. And it does make a very, very big difference. So I think we've got our case in point as to why we think we need Starlink in Australia and why it needs to happen faster and faster. I still think the ACMA license is insane. And if we are seriously thinking about a 5-year time period before it is allowed, before it's allowed to potentially move into these other areas that are currently excluded, I think it's a real shame. One of the other benefits that I was thinking about, and I have sort of sense tested this with a number of people, is travel. Now, a lot of people are traveling around Australia. A lot of people are holidaying at home, as they probably should be, with COVID and everything else going on. Imagine putting a Starlink satellite on top of a caravan. Imagine putting one near your tent. Imagine having one with you when you travel. What would that mean? Well, potentially it could mean that you could work and travel at the same time. It could potentially mean that your caravan could stream Netflix in the evening. If we're talking about a bit more luxury, it really means that there's not much you can't do while you're traveling. And sure, a lot of people like to disconnect when they travel, and that's totally on you. But if you do want to remain connected, taking a Starlink dish with you is a pretty cool way to do it. So that's what Starlink is. That's what Starlink does. And that's why I think Starlink's important. Now, once I heard that it launched, a quick search on Twitter helped me easily find some people who were testing and enjoying their Starlink experience. And one of them was Lisa. Lisa lives in northern Victoria, somewhere where they have struggled with adequate internet for some time, and obviously an expensive internet connection for some time as well. And Lisa was kind enough to join us on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Lisa, one of the first Starlink customers in Australia. So Lisa, what were you using for internet access before Starlink came about, and how much were you paying?
We have been using a mixture of Optus and Telstra mobile data. So from our phones, from a, you know, like a router, which takes the chip, the 4G chip. The kids have got little, you know, mobile Optus modems that they use, and that was a lot cheaper, the Optus, than Telstra. So that's why the kids got that, but it's a lot slower than Telstra. So for the business and for my work from home, we've been using Telstra. Yeah. And so around $300 a month, I think, we've been paying, which I've done another article for the ABC, and I got a bit of a hammering for paying that much on Facebook this morning that I was stupid. But we really had no choice. We just, you know, there was nothing else we could do. We had SkyMuster or SkyMesh or something when we first moved here about 3.5 years ago.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It was awful, and we had outages and slow speeds, and I think, you know, it was $200 a month for 200 gig, and, you know, the kids had just ripped through that with a few videos,
And what do you primarily use the internet for in your home? I mean, you've got a couple of kids, so I'm guessing some online gaming probably, schoolwork from home.
Yeah, that's like that. Right. So especially during the lockdown that we were that was tough because it went a lot slower when everybody was at home. We have a small business that we run, so we use that, use internet for that, for all our invoicing, you know, bank transfers, accounting, all that sort of thing, communication. And I also work for the local hospital as a data analyst, so I'm trying to pull big data sets from their databases back to here over the internet. And, yeah, so that's what we're using it for mainly.
Were there things that you couldn't do before going on Starlink, or was it just that things just took a lot longer?
They just took a lot longer, So, I mean, we set up our system yesterday afternoon and everyone was online last night, easily streaming TV shows and everything with no buffering, no who's on the internet, can you get up on to watch that show sort of thing. So Yeah, and we were getting amazing speeds last night, which I know won't be sustained once everybody hops on because we're one of the first ones, but we were getting over 300 megabits a second last night, which is like amazing fast, yeah.
Well, it's amazing fast for anybody in Australia. I mean, whether you're on Starlink or even if you've got the good NBN, that's still an incredible speed to be receiving. So, you know, that part I love to hear about, but I also want to go back to, you know, you went through a sign-up process. I assume they contacted you and then shipped you the dish. What was the setup process like?
So originally I was at Harvey Norman buying a router, and a young, you know, techie guy said to me, don't spend too much on your internet. The new Elon Musk Starlink is coming. I'm like, oh, what's that? And, you know, went home and looked it up, and, my partner just said, just pay the deposit. So we paid like, I think it was $130 deposit. And we were told that we would, you know, they'd get back to us July to December this year. And then all of a sudden last week, you know, everyone was getting these emails saying your order's been processed, it's on its way. And we had an ETA of the 26th of April and it arrived yesterday. So that was really cool. And basically we just opened the box, everything was plugged in, we put the dish outside, like on our outdoor table and plugged it in and it turned on and that was it. Like it just worked, and we were getting 200 megabits a second then just on the outdoor table, you know, next to the house. And then last night my partner put it up on the roof and then we started getting the 300.
That's what I was going to ask, is whether you're going to roof mount it, because obviously it's all about line of sight, having the best connection to the satellites that are out there. And was that a simple process for them to for you to get it roof mounted?
Yeah, so husband's pretty handy. So he had a bracket sort of thing down in the shed that he just attached to the stand that it came with and whacked it on a pole on the roof of the house. And we thought, we'll see how that goes. It's going really well. We've also got an old tank stand, which is about 10 meters high. So if we wanted to get more height, we could definitely pop it up there too. Yeah.
And is there an app that comes with this to sort of help you do the setup and also to make sure that you have got it facing in the right direction and that it's set up properly? Is there some sort of guidance from Starlink on that?
But really all it is a camera that shows you that there's no obstructions, like you've got a clear sight of the sky. But the dish moves on its own. So it's like a robot. It's sort of...
it moves.
Yeah. It was cool because when we had it on the outdoor dining table, my daughter and I were there and we were just like, oh my God, it's moving now. And so, it moved to pick up the next satellite or whatever. That's sort of starting to get a bit out of my realm of understanding. But, it moves around,
Oh, that's incredible. And just thinking about that too, have you noticed with the dish itself, obviously it's come from an American company, and those questions about whether they'll be able to cope with Australian conditions. Does it look durable? Does it look tough enough for big old Australian summers?
It looks tough. We're in our cool weather at the moment. It was warm, like the dish was quite warm, but apparently it's heated. It does rely on a certain amount of heat. And and that is my question is, how is it? Because we could get 45 degrees up here on a hot summer day, and I don't know how that's going to go. And that's the risk we've taken, and because Starlink haven't made any promises around that, and I'm totally aware of that, and I'm totally okay with it because of the nightmare that we've sustained for so long. And really, if things look like they're maybe getting a bit hairy or whatever, we'll just hop up and grab it and bring it inside. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Like, and that's actually less hassle than what we've put up with for 3.5 years. So there's been some talk about that. And cockies, somebody was talking about cockatoos. But I mean, we've got satellite dishes everywhere. I haven't heard any big inundations of cockatoos on satellite dishes. So I'm not, you can probably hear them at the moment here. They don't really, we've got our old Sky Mesh one or whatever it was sitting on the roof, and it's not, the cockies have never gone near it. So I'm not too concerned about that.
Okay. And I guess lastly, obviously with this coming into the home, do you then share it on a router which you've brought in yourself, which has Wi-Fi, or did they supply something to do that as well?
Yeah, no, they've supplied a modem. So that's what we're using at the moment, but I've got an extender and another router there. So as I say, my office is 50 meters away from the house, which is where the system will be based. So I'm going to do a bit of research and see how I can extend it down to here. We've got the Google Home stuff and all that sort of thing. So Beautiful. We haven't had a chance to connect all that up yet, but But yeah, so look, I think the modem's fine. I have heard online some people are buying different ones to use, but yeah, at this stage it seems quite sufficient for us, yes.
And I guess lastly, if you know, now that you've gone through the setup process, if you could give feedback to Starlink, and obviously if Elon Musk was listening to this show, is there anything that you would change or wish was slightly different in any way?
Not at all, no. Look, when we turned it on yesterday, it worked really well for a couple of seconds, but we because the dish was just on the table, we moved it and it seemed to drop out and we're like, oh my God, it's not working now. And there is no phone number to ring. You've just got to go online if you have any issues. I suppose that may be the only thing that pops to mind. But for the prices and things, it's a really good trade-off. Yeah. But like that's the only thing I could think of, because everything has been so easy and it came fast. The shipping was great. Everything. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it almost sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? I mean,
he's
done so much to sort of get us to this point where we're actually able to start using it in parts of Australia. The obviously the network is going to grow, the amount of satellites will expand.
Yep.
So more people will start to get to use it soon as well. For me, it's fascinating, and I think at $139 a month for unlimited use at the moment, it's insane. Mm. I'll be curious to see when they get to a plans point of view, when they do start to say, right, we need to start having different tiers. And what will be fair and what won't be fair in terms of the amount of downloads. But I do think it will always be a much better option than going back to SkyMuster or using 4G, for example.
Yeah, and from what's happening in the States, they haven't implemented those restrictions yet. I don't think Starlink have actually, you know, officially said that's what they're going to do. They've officially said they'll offer better speeds. So I don't know where that'll end up going, but there hasn't been, I'm not sure how long it's been in the States. It's been a while and they haven't, you know, put any of those restrictions on yet. And it's been very successful for the people over there, that some of their speeds and prices are just dreadful that they pay over.
That's
there.
True.
Unbelievable.
And now that you are, I guess, in the 21st century, you have got good internet. what is next for your home? You mentioned you've got some Google Smart products already. Is there anything else you'd love to start to get into now that you've got the bandwidth to do it?
Yeah, I don't know. There's probably things that pop up every now and then, but I can't think of right now. I mean, I suppose just even with the Google Home thing, sometimes, you know, the internet hasn't been good enough for it to, you know, I've got Google telling me, oh, that device is not online or something. And so I won't have to listen to that much more. And I've got a couple of smart kettles, which are really cool, and enjoy using those. I'm sure there's lots and lots of things we'll do that we just have restricted ourselves and learned to live without. And now we'll be able to start, you know, going, oh, we can do that. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I absolutely love it. And it certainly opens up possibilities for people who live in the city who are thinking about moving to the country and didn't want to lose the benefits of having a good internet connection.
Yeah, that is a massive thing, because I work for the local hospital and we have a lot of trouble getting people to come and live in these areas and work at our hospital. And one of those is, you know, poor internet. And there's a lot of other reasons, but to be able to say, you can come work at the hospital, your partner can work from home and do this and that, or run your business from home, that's a really big thing for us. And, you know, it comes down to those things that the really micro level, that we could get a doctors up here and patients are going to be seen quicker and all that sort of thing. And we have better health services. It means a lot more than just streaming Netflix or whatever. Yeah.
I agree. Lisa, thank you so much for talking to us today. I feel like I now know somebody who has Starlink in Australia and that just makes me smile. So it's good to hear from one of their first customers.
Thank you, Jeff.
And we really do thank Lisa for joining us. It was so nice to hear some firsthand experience there. Now, a couple of things that I have pulled out as I was listening to that interview, and I want to just sort of rehash to make sure that it wasn't missed, because if you are going to be somebody who's considering signing up for Starlink you do need to be well aware of these kinds of things. Now, the first one was there is no customer service. I mean, there is, it's via email, which can be very difficult to do if that's the only connection that you're relying on and you've lost your internet connection. There's no phone number that you can ring. I don't think they actually have much of an Australian presence, especially from a customer service point of view. So actually getting support could be difficult. And I think if you're signing up for Starlink, especially in these early stages, you need to almost accept the fact that you're going to be a little bit of a guinea pig. So do remember that. You also would have heard that they've unboxed and set this satellite dish up themselves. They've roof mounted it themselves. There isn't necessarily a Starlink technician that's going to drive all across country Australia to help you with the installation. And that's something you need to be aware of again and willing to follow the steps, go through the process and get the thing wired up and running. What I also found interesting was that even if you've got Starlink working and you're doing speed tests straight from the modem and you're getting a wonderful speed, it's that the same rules apply to anybody else who's using the NBN or any other service, that the way you spread your internet around the home is just as important as the connection itself, because you might be able to get 300 megabits per second from Starlink itself. But if your Wi-Fi network or if your mesh Wi-Fi in the home is not set up properly or you have not got an adequate Wi-Fi coverage, your experience is still not going to be as good because you're too far away from the wireless signal or whatever the case may be. So always remember that your internet connection is one thing, your internet connection performance inside the home is separate. So having good Wi-Fi, having a mesh Wi-Fi system to get Wi-Fi across the whole home, or even having a wired system if that's what you choose to do, these things are critical to actually making sure the experience works well. So do pay attention to those things. I think from what Lisa's telling us, it was a great experience so far. And I could probably check in again with her in the future to see how things are going and to see where performance has gone, especially as they start to sign up more customers, almost at the same time as they bring on more satellites, whether the fluctuation is going up or if it's going down in terms of speed. If you're interested in Starlink, head to starlink.com. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to me anytime. You'll find me. I'm the only Jeff Quattromani on the planet. Type it into Google and you'll certainly find me. And seriously, email me your questions. Hit me up on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And I look forward to hearing from you. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been the special edition of Technology Uncorked, Starlink edition. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye-bye.